everybody, and welcome to my podcast, Fulfillment in Faith. I am your host, Shannon Bondor, and I am a best-selling author, mentor, mindset and manifesting coach, and public speaker. Today's episode is a continuation of my series, You Are Not the Only One. I was brought forth to do this series because during my healing from my addiction to alcohol, there were so many times that the universe had brought me to silence. And during those times is when I learned so many things about myself and I was guided. I was guided to talk openly about my past, my abuse, my addiction, and to speak my truth. From those moments of silence is when we learn, we grow, we teach, and then we help others. Hello, everyone. So today I've got an absolutely wonderful guest. I love her name, Kalila Green. I've never heard that name before. So she is here and she's going to tell us her time of stillness. But first of all, she's going to tell us a little bit about herself, where she's from, and then from there, she's going to go in her story. But one thing I do want to know about your beautiful name, Kalila, is where did that come from? Is that from a certain nationality or?
It is. And it's actually a very funny story. So to start it off a little lighthearted, my family is Jewish and my parents are both very proud of their Jewish background and very proud of their connections with Israel, but they didn't speak Hebrew and they don't speak Hebrew. And so they knew that they wanted to name their child a Hebrew name. And I'm their only child and my parents are both Laura and Larry, which comes from the Latin root of laurel. So When it's spelled in English, Kalila is supposed to mean crown of laurel, which is beautiful. And something I grew up with thinking like, wow, I'm my parents' gem. I'm the only child. That's such a beautiful name. And then I lived in Israel for part of high school and I had a counselor that used to call me piece of cake. And I was like, well, I don't understand. Why do you keep calling me that? He said, your name, it means easy. And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, well, the way your parents spelled it in Hebrew, it doesn't mean crown of laurel. It actually means easy. So I like to think of it as easygoing, which is really my personality. And so I've embraced it. And so that's what
Kalila means. Let me tell you, I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love it. Good for you. Okay, so let's get into you. Let's find out a little bit about yourself here and then we will continue on, my dear.
Okay, so as you know, I'm Jewish. That's a very big part of my background, but I was born and raised in the Northeast. My parents they got married very early and they wanted to have me as they were well established. So like I said, I'm an only child. I grew up with a lot of cousins and I grew up with a lot of close family friends that were really considered almost like brothers and sisters and cousins in that respect, even though they weren't directly related. And I went to school in Boston for college. And then when I was done, I graduated and I moved to Los Angeles and I spent almost 20 years in Los Angeles. And through working at a company, I actually met my husband. The company had gone under before we started dating, but we kept in touch. And so thank God for online media and social media and Facebook and all that kind of stuff, because that's where we stayed connected through that. And we got married in 2010 and pretty much got pregnant right away. My daughter was born literally 9 months, almost to the day of when we got married. And then I had very easy pregnancies for all three of my kids. My kids were born 2.5 years apart. So my daughter now is 12. My middle child, who's my first son, is almost 10. And my third is 7. And I love being pregnant. That's like my whole thing. I said, when I got pregnant, I felt like I knew I wanted to be a mom my entire life. I called it my superpower because I never got the pregnancy symptoms that everybody else complained about. I never got morning sickness or swollen feet or puffy face or, you know, none of that. And my friends were like, I don't understand. You do pregnancy like you are just supposed to be pregnant your entire life. And I was like, yeah, I don't get it. It's my superpower. So during COVID, in all of the lockdowns and everything, we ended up actually moving cross country and we are now in Florida and we absolutely love it down here. The weather is similar to California, but a little bit more humid. And it just, it's a nice quiet area, and my kids have the opportunity to be outside more and to ride their bikes and things like that. So it's really fantastic.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So let's get into your story of stillness. What brought you to where you are today, my dear?
That one is a little bit more complicated, because since I called being pregnant my superpower, my husband and I decided that we wanted to look into surrogacy. And there was a lot of different factors that went into it. We weren't sure if by being Jewish that that would say that we wouldn't be allowed to do surrogacy, because the Jewish laws might conflict with that. But we looked into it. We talked to the rabbis in our area, and they actually said that no, that people have actually ruled on this before in various different Jewish laws, and looking at the laws of the Torah, that it was okay and that surrogacy is totally acceptable. So we found a couple and we connected with them instantly. And it was one of those where we just felt like this was totally meant to be. In Hebrew, it's called beshert.
Can I ask what was the process of finding a couple? Like how did you get to that point that you thought that you would, like, you decided you wanted to be a surrogate mother.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, where did you go? You said you just found a couple.
So
it all sort of
happened like very, very much. And I felt like God was guiding me the entire time. So what happened first was my husband and I, with our kids, were out at this like family festival in Los Angeles. And it's one that we had been to before when my third child was born. And when he was an infant, I was like, oh, this looks like a great place. It's so close to the house. Let's just walk around. And if we can't stay very long, that's great. We did. We had a great time. The next year, I was like, let's go back. We had such a good time. Now that everyone's a little bit older, they can actually do some of the booths and the activities. And we went back and we set up a small area for picnics with a snack as we were there for a little while. And as I looked up from sitting for this snack time, I saw across from where we were sitting that there was a surrogacy booth. And I immediately jumped up and I said to my husband, I'll be right back. And he was like, okay, where are you going? I have to go to the surrogacy booth. I'll tell you later. So he was like, okay, I guess I'm in charge of snack time. So I went over to talk to them, and they were giving out balloons, and they were giving out these little like purple squishies for the kids. And they said, oh, you must have lost your balloon. Everyone keeps coming up to us that their kid let their balloon go. And I said, no, I don't even know that I got a balloon. That's not why I'm here. And they said, oh, you probably dropped your squishy. I was like, no, I'm not here for the squishy. I want to talk to you about surrogacy. And the lady, I think, almost jumped over the table and gave me a hug because she was so excited that someone was interested. So I ended up having about a 2.5 hour conversation with her later on in the week, where we set up a phone time. And that was where I had this realization that because I am Jewish, I had to talk to the rabbi first to make sure that I could do it. And when I found out through the rabbis, I needed to actually work with a Jewish couple in order to have their baby. So I said to her, like, look, I want to be able to work with you. If you don't have any Jewish couples, I need to be able to know that I can go to other surrogacy agencies. And so she said that was fine. Usually what they do is they sign with a contract that says you will only work with our surrogacy agency, because there are so many people, unfortunately, who need a surrogate. And so if you sign with an agency, they want you to work with their couples. So because she didn't have any Jewish families, she said that I was free to look around. And I started doing research online, and I found an agency in New York that ended up working with Jewish families, and they had a few that needed a surrogate. So I contacted them, and through various different steps, I actually outline it. I'm hopefully coming out with my book by the end of next year. But in the whole process, I outline how that worked and exactly what questions they asked and how we met the couple that we ended up working with in the end. But it was through an agency.
It blows me away, because someone like you comes forth because you know this is your calling to be a surrogate mother. And I can't even imagine for you to contact these agencies. The person on the other end must be just, oh my goodness.
Yeah. The response was definitely one of those.
I was going to say, Kalila, there can't be an overwhelming amount of women that will step into your shoes and want to do that. And like, I don't want to say want, but it is a want. It's a calling is what it is.
Yeah.
So you all in itself are one very special lady. Wow.
Thank you. It's definitely one where most people have never even met a surrogate, let alone have ever considered being a surrogate. So it's a little bit more common nowadays, just in the sense that there's been like two or three people that I've told my story to that have said, oh, my cousin used a surrogate, or I know like my neighbor used a surrogate and she told me about it. But those stories, I think literally, like I said, maybe three times I've heard that.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my really good friends, they had a surrogate for their daughters. Mm-hmm. And, wow. Amazing. So yeah, continue on with your journey. I want to know more. Like this is.
Yeah. So the amazing. First pregnancy went fantastic. I ended up meeting this couple. We fell in love with them. They fell in love with us, and we all signed all the paperwork, and I started the IVF medication. And I went in for the first transfer, and that actually, it didn't take, they had transferred two embryos. And that was the first time that I had a clue as to the fact that pregnancy didn't always work the way that it was supposed to. I think I was a little more upset than the parents were, even, because they had gotten to the point when a couple or a person gets to surrogacy, usually they've gone through so many failed pregnancies and so many pregnancy losses and so many failed IVF attempts that they're like, well, it just adds to the babies that we've lost. Like they're so numb from it. Whereas for me, this was the first time I'd ever gone through that. So I was very upset, but they said, you know, we want to try again. Let's set a date with the doctor and make sure that it works. So I didn't have to wait very long because the embryos never even took. So really it wasn't even considered a pregnancy loss. It was just a failed attempt. And so I think it was about a month later, I went in for the second round of IVF. And again, they did two embryos and one took. And I was monitored every single week for the first trimester, and he looked fantastic. And they knew it was a boy, which is really cool that they can tell even in the first 10 days of an embryo that they
really
know. Yeah, they know if it's a boy or girl. It's amazing. So every time I would go to a doctor's appointment, I would call them and see if they wanted to FaceTime. I would send them text messages. I would send them any pictures I had of the ultrasound. So even before I talked to my husband about the fact that the pregnancy was going well, every single time I would call them first. And it was fantastic. And then in December, I was due the very, very beginning of December. And my doctor checked me on my due date and said, I know, you know, you've been having Braxton Hicks and everything looks great. We're going to give you until the end of this week. And if you don't go into labor, we're putting you in, and that's that. And I never really officially went into labor. So I went in on a Friday morning and they induced me, and he was the fastest birth. He was the easiest one out of all four of my pregnancies. And 4 hours later, he was here. And so that was right before COVID. And even while I was in labor, we were all saying, we want to do this again. The parents were like, whenever you're ready. And I was looking at my doula, like, tell me when I can do this again.
Oh, that is so wonderful. So who was in the delivery with you? Was your husband there?
And then- no, it was a packed room, and he was not one of the people that was there. Okay. He was with my own kids, because I knew that I needed him home. He's no help in the delivery room. And I was like, I don't need him there looking at the monitors and then telling me what's going on. Like, I wanted to do this without medication. I wanted to do this with a doula. So it was my doula, my best friend, the parents, and then I guess the nurses and my doctor, I think, was everybody. I don't know. By that point, I think I had tuned everybody else out, but.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Especially doing it natural. Oh my God.
Yeah.
My first was a C-section, and then my last three, I had to have epidurals because, yeah, well, good for you. Wow.
Well, for my own three, I had to have epidurals, but having a doula made all the difference in the world. And then she actually inspired me to become a doula. So I became a doula right after that.
Good for you. So then COVID hit.
Yep.
And then what happened?
COVID in a way for us, I mean, it was awful as it was for everybody else, but I didn't have to worry about pregnancy for a while because I knew that I needed to make sure that my body rested for at least a year. And mm-hmm. so for all of 2020, it was like, okay, so we're stuck at home, you know, we're going to protect ourselves and we're not going out and whatever. And it was fine. I knew I couldn't get pregnant, and we were okay with that. And then 2021, I started getting a little antsy, and I kept saying, like, okay, so when can we do this? And because there was still so much that was up in the air, we had to wait that year. until we could start doing any sort of medication again. And in January of 2022, I was given the green light that I could go ahead and start with the medication for the IVF transfer. And it would be in May of 2022.
Now, was this for the same couple or was this a different couple? It was for the same couple.
Same couple. I wanted to do a sibling journey for them. So we went in for the transfer in May and everything looked great. I was on bed rest for 3 days. I flew home. I guess it was after the weekend. I went in Florida. We were here at that point, and I went in every week for my checkups, and the doctor said, you know, the heartbeat looks great and the baby implanted in the right place. And we're just going to keep testing you every single week and make sure that everything's going along the way it should. And every week they would test my blood levels. They would test the progesterone and the estrogen and the testosterone and the HCG and all that stuff that they monitor while you're pregnant, if it's a high-risk pregnancy or if it's an IVF pregnancy. And I graduated, I think at 10 weeks, I graduated officially from the clinic and they sent me to my regular OB. So I went in at, I think I went in at 12 weeks and everything looked great. We got a full report. I sent the parents an update. I showed them pictures on the ultrasound. We heard the heartbeat and everything. And that was in the end of July of 2022. And I was supposed to go back for my 16-week appointment at the end of August. And I went in on a normal, it was like a random Wednesday. I had picked my kids up from their classes and I thought it was just going to be a regular appointment. And I even remember saying to the mom in the car, like I was having a pregnancy symptom the day before where my daughter had eaten lox on a bagel and she brought it in the car. And I was thinking like, oh, that just hit me in the wrong way. And I was getting that gross feeling. So I was like, good, everything's going great. And I get to the doctor and they send me into the nurse and they start doing the heart monitor, the Doppler. And she is like, not sure if she can find a heartbeat. And I knew from all my other pregnancies that sometimes it can be a little bit tricky when it's still early on to find the heartbeat because the baby is moving a lot. So at first I was like, okay, this is fine. It's totally normal. And as the minutes are ticking by, I'm starting to get more and more nervous and my heart is starting to pound. And then she actually at one point picked up my own heartbeat and we thought it was the baby's. And she said, I need to call the doctor in. And now I'm like almost in full blown panic mode and my kids are still in the room with me. And the doctor ended up coming in and took me into the ultrasound room because he was getting concerned. And the second they put the ultrasound on, the nurse said, there's no heartbeat.
And how many weeks were you?
16 weeks and 5 days.
Yeah.
And my daughter was really the only one who noticed that something was wrong. Thank God my boys were totally immersed in the iPad. And my daughter came over and I'm laying on my back. Fortunately, it was an ultrasound that was of my belly and it was not an intrusive ultrasound. And so my legs were down and I just remember looking up at the monitor and my daughter put her hand on my shoulder and she said, is everything okay? And I just started shaking my head. And like, I didn't know what to do because not only now I have to worry about explaining this to my children that this baby is not alive, but I have to worry about telling my parents and my husband and the baby's parents. And so I didn't even know what questions I needed to ask in terms of like, what happens? What do I do? Are you sure? I went through all the phases of grief within 2 seconds. Cause I was like, no, that's impossible. How could this have happened? I was so angry at everything at that moment, literally in a span of a few seconds, every phase of grief hit me all at once. And then, when I took a deep breath and I looked at the doctor and I think I had sat up at that point, I said, what do I do? And he said, you need to go to the hospital. I said, well, can I bring my kids home or does my husband have to meet me there? He said, go home. Your husband should drive you to the hospital. And if you want him there, he can stay. But pack a bag because I don't think you're going to go home today. And because they actually had to put me into labor and delivery.
Yeah. That's
and so,
yeah.
Yeah. So I don't remember how I got home. I remember that I called my mom and I remember that I called my best friend. From my doctor's office to my house, it's not a very far drive, but I do not remember how I got home. And as I put my hand on the doorknob, the parents called me because they were in a meeting when I was at the doctor's office. And I just like collapsed. I started sobbing hysterically. My husband had seen the car pull up and didn't know why we were taking so long to get in. And so he came outside and just saw me like in a ball on the floor. Mm-hmm. So I told them, and I grabbed my stuff. My husband drove me to the hospital, and he actually dropped me off, because at that point, I didn't know how long I was going to be there, but I didn't think it was going to be very long. And I thought, someone needs to be home with my kids. Mm-hmm. I can't just have him drop my kids off at a friend's house, who I know I have a few friends here in Florida that I could easily drop them off with, but I had no idea if they were going to be there overnight or if it was just going to be for a few hours. And my family is very close with each other. We homeschool and we're around each other a lot. And my husband works from home and I work from home. And yes, we do socialize and we get out with other people, but I just didn't want to leave them without an explanation. And I didn't think I had time to fully go into it, nor did I have the strength to tell them what was going on in detail. So I thought, if my husband can be home with them and talk to them about what was going on, I was strong enough that I could be in the hospital, and that was what was going to happen. And so my daughter was the one who took it the hardest at first. My sons really weren't sure what was going on. And she got out of the car when my husband dropped me off and like wouldn't let go. And at the time she was 11. So she's very mature for her age. And she had never gone through separation anxiety with me. She's always been a very confident kid. She's always been somebody who I could easily drop off at a daycare or at a school program or whatever it was. And she wouldn't let go. And I couldn't keep it together. I just kept saying, I'm coming home. I'm coming home. I promise. I won't be home tonight, but I will come home. I'm going to see you. And I like forced her hands off my shoulders and I walked in. I said goodbye to my boys. I walked in and I somehow made it up to labor and delivery. And I said, I need to check in. I think I have to go into labor and delivery, something like I have a miscarriage or I lost the baby, something along those lines. I don't remember exactly what I said. And as they're checking me in, I can just hear all the noises of the hospital with the babies being born and the music and all. And I couldn't hold it together. It was awful. The whole process, for anybody that has to go through it and sit literally in the labor and delivery ward while other babies are being born, it's like the worst form of torture. Mm. So I was there for 2 days. They gave me medicine to start labor that night, and I delivered the baby the next day, but my placenta was not detaching. So I ended up having to go into, the emergency room and have a DNC. Thank God for the anesthesiologist, because he said to me, I can put you in a twilight sleep or I can just knock you out. And I looked him in the eye and I said, I've been here since yesterday. He said, I'm going to knock you out. I said, thank God. And that was all I remember. And I, and also thank God for my nurse, because I have rings with my kids' names on it that I wear all the time, and I couldn't take them off. Like everything else, I took off my wedding band. I took off my necklaces. You know, when you go into operation, they want you to remove all your jewelry. And I said to her, can I please leave my kids' rings on my hand? And she said, we'll just put a Band-Aid over it. Don't worry about it. So I was like, God bless you. And she also let me take my phone in to the last possible minute. And then she took my phone back to my room for me so I could talk to my husband literally as the doctor was putting the needle in to make me go to sleep. So I ended up going home the next day, which I think was a Friday morning. Cause I checked in on Wednesday night. And I then had to try and figure out how to get through this. I knew one person that had gone through a stillbirth, and I had never really known anybody who talked about a miscarriage. I'd never known anybody who had gone through a late term miscarriage. And so I didn't even know where to start at that point. They send you home with material, but it's all material as to like, okay, this is how your body might react. This is how long you might bleed for. This is the things that might happen. But I was like, but I want to know what's going on in my head and my heart. Like nobody's talking about that.
Yeah. We had talked when we did our meet and greet. I didn't tell you the process that I had went through. So I had lost a baby girl back in, it doesn't even matter when it was, from osteogenesis imperfecta type 2. And for people that don't know what that is called brittle bone disease. So I had to terminate my pregnancy before she was 21 weeks. because she was never going to survive. So when you talk about when you go through that process and when you come home and you don't know what to do, you know, because it's your head and your heart and everything else. And that was exactly how I felt. Like, I did not want to leave the house. I didn't want to see anybody because I didn't want people to be looking at me, because I did. There was a part of me that had the shame. And there was a part of me that really felt like I was a failure. Like, why would this happen to me?
Right.
And it's that guilt, and you really question who you are. Like, what's wrong with me? What, you know, and that pain that I had, yep, to go through. So it's like, this happened for a reason. I know it happened for a reason, but what is this reason? And why, right, did it have to happen this way? Could you not have shown me in any other way, for God's sakes? Right. You know? So you have to, you endure all of that pain as well. And the guilt. Yep. You know, and the people looking,
the guilt is the worst.
Yes. And the people looking at you and they're feeling sorry for you. There's an aspect of me that was really freaking angry. Like, mm-hmm, don't look at me. Don't look at me and judge me, even, yep, though you might be feeling sorry for me, but yet you can't come up and talk to me. And that, right, was the biggest thing that I really had to deal with. People would give me those sad eyes,
mm-hmm,
or they'd give me that look, you know, that they are feeling sorry for me, but, right, yet they didn't have the nerve or the courage to come up and just talk to me.
Right. Like, all I wanted, even just to hold your hand.
Exactly. Exactly. But, yeah, of course people are fearful of that as well. You, right, know, of what my reaction would be towards, right, them. And I get, right, that. And I understand that, but that is such a difficult, difficult thing. So I know exactly, yeah, what you went through. Yeah. Yeah. Sitting in
and I do thank God that my community in general was very supportive. And in Judaism, there, when you go through something that is life, a tragedy, a life altering, something where you've survived a horrific experience, there's a prayer that you can say. So a lot of times, like, I said it for each of my other pregnancies after I had the baby, because going through labor and delivery is something that is sort of a life challenging event. It could go wrong in a heartbeat. And looking back on it, I thank God now, like, I couldn't even believe that I went through four pregnancies with no complications. But there is a prayer that you say, and you're supposed to say it with 9 other people. So if you're a woman, you say it with 9 other women usually. And if you're saying it after, like, a good thing that's happened, for example, like labor and delivery, you say it at the synagogue at a time of the week where they're reading from the Torah. And so I had done that for each of my kids. And so I had to gather 9 women from my community to be able to say this prayer of thanks for allowing me to get through it without taking my life. And I think that was one of the hardest things, because we had lived in the community here for about 1.5 years, and there was a handful of people I knew I could call with no problem. And then I was like, but who else is going to be there for me? Not only is this not my baby, but I feel like I'm still new to this community. So I thankfully found 9 women without a problem. In fact, I think we actually had more than 9 women. And so the Sunday after I had gotten home, they sat with me. And that was the part that really meant so much to me, is not only did I get to say this one prayer, it's literally one line, but they just sat with me and they let me cry and they let me just be there with them. One of them held my hand. One of them sat next to me. And that really meant more than I possibly could have thought. So when you say, like, people looked at you and you didn't, it made you angry. I feel like I almost had the opposite response, because I knew that I had those 9 people that even beyond that prayer, I could just go up to and lean on them if I needed to.
See, and I can look back now, like with your scenario, you had a chance to express.
Right.
And, you know, you were in the safety of these 9 women,
mm-hmm,
where with me, they were looking at me. So instead of coming to me and touching me and holding my hand, those looks told me you need to suppress.
Ugh.
Right? Total difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Total difference. So that's what I did, is I suppressed.
Yeah. And that's one of the worst things that you could do.
Oh,
because
oh yeah. But
bottling,
of course,
it up and bottling it up.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I suppressed. Right? Because that's what those looks were telling me to do.
Right.
You know? It, you know, don't talk about it, you know, which is, right, led me to so many other areas in my life where things went wrong, right? Yeah, absolutely. Wow, what an amazing story. So what took place after that? Like, you know, did you go through a healing process? Well, of course you went through a healing process. Of course you did. Like, you wouldn't be here, right? But let's go on to that part of your journey, you know, especially because, you know, that whole aspect, because it wasn't about you.
Right.
There was so much more that involved, right?
Yeah.
You know, with the surrogate parents and all of that. So where did that lead you? Where did that take you?
So the first thing I did was my husband had to help me with a lot. I went through information overload at anything, any insurance question, anytime a doctor called me, anytime somebody was giving me information, I like shut down completely and I could not process anything the person was saying for a good few weeks after it happened. I remember on one specific phone call, I think it was with our lawyer, because there was a whole discrepancy at the very end, since it was a surrogacy in terms of payments and whatever. And I just remember looking at the phone on speaker and looking at my husband in his office and going, help. And yeah. He just took the phone from me and said, don't worry, I'll help out. It's fine. And so he said to the person, you know, Kalila can't respond right now. This is her husband. I'm helping out. So they said, okay. And they totally accepted that, because he obviously, thank God, he's my husband and he was on the paperwork and everything like that. But the healing was a very, I feel like, not different process, because everybody who goes through healing from a loss, specifically with pregnancy or from an infant death, has their own individual process. And you can't ever compare one to the other. We're all walking a different path. We're all dealing with our own inner emotions and inner conflicts between our head and our heart. And I would never try and compare my story to somebody else's. I just knew that the first thing I was thinking, and it was a continuous thought, was I'm going to be forgotten because it was not my baby. And people are going to expect me to get over this because it was not my baby. And I just kept thinking, but I was the one who failed. I was the one who, I was supposed to take care of this baby like I did for the other four. And somehow my body failed me. And so I ended up finding, through my hospital and through my doctor, a group that used to solely be based in Florida, but now they do a Zoom program because of COVID, which, again, like, you can find blessings in anything. As awful as COVID was, it's also opened up this whole process of Zoom, and that you can connect people from all over. And so the doctor that was in charge of it is a psychiatrist. He does individual patients in his office, but he also runs this program that's called HEAL. And he is a lost parent. His wife went through a stillbirth. I think it was at 32 weeks. So he knew exactly where every single one of his patients was coming from. And he created this group in memory of his daughter and in wanting to be able to help other people. And what happens is you commit to 7 weeks. It's a totally free program that's sponsored by the hospital. And it's usually 10 to 12 couples that are going through the process of loss and want support to lean on each other. Mm-hmm. And so they do 7 weeks once a week for 2 hours of the psychiatrist basically worked with us for the first hour in terms of his own experience. And then he would concentrate on a specific aspect of healing for the second hour. And then we, as the group, we could talk to each other. They gave us all of our phone numbers. So like, even the other women that were part of the group with me, I'm on a group chat with them still. And we, you know, we've now since caught up, and some people have already had babies now, and some people are working on getting pregnant. So it's a really nice way to say, look, we all know what each other is going through, and it's okay. We know, like, if you are getting pregnant, we want to know about it. We're celebrating in your joy because we know where you came from and we know your pain. Mm-hmm. So that group was beyond valuable. I didn't pay anything for it. And I felt like I would have paid whatever they asked, looking back on it, because it was just so, there was so much value in going through that. So that was the first thing. The second thing was that I deep dived into the internet, where I looked at every possible resource I could find. I looked at every possible resource for resiliency and for anxiety and for panic attacks and for helping your kids and making sure that you were taking care of yourself, and really learned to apply breathing techniques and journaling and gratitude and being able to be in the moment when you're going through a panic attack or an anxiety moment. And I created something that I felt like, because I didn't have a child to show for what I had gone through, I created what I felt like was then not replacing the child, but could be in honor of that child. And I created the Pregnancy Loss Toolkit, which has a workbook with all the things that I learned. So how to separate your days in grief. Because as you know, when you're going through something so traumatic, every day melds into the next, every week melds into the next. The next thing you know, 4 months have gone by and you look back and you go, I don't even remember what I wore yesterday, let alone what happened 3 months ago. So there's a way to separate each individual day and take it as it comes. There's grounding techniques and there's journaling prompts and there's affirmations and there's space for you to write your own affirmations and just all the things that helped me to be able to work my way through the grief. Mm-hmm. It also has various different objects just to show the person that they're getting a long distance hug. It's got chocolate and an eye mask and some fuzzy socks and that kind of stuff, like things that I knew I would want if I was on the other end of receiving that. And then I am most recently working on starting my podcast, which comes out on November 28th, and it's called Pushing Through Loss. And it's allowing that safe space for people to tell their stories, and not just pregnancy loss survivors, but the people that it affects. So like my daughter said, I want to come on and be interviewed. And at first I thought, well, that seems a little odd. And then I thought, no, she has every right to come on and be interviewed because she experienced it just as I did, just in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Just to let the audience know that what Kalila has just said, all of her information will be in the podcast notes. Now going back just a little bit here through that whole process that you went through. Like there's so much pain and it's a learning lesson and a process. And sometimes you just look at life and you think, why in the hell is this happening? But of course we know that it's a journey that we're on, and that's why we're here. So what would you say was your biggest learning experience for what you went through?
I think understanding that I wasn't alone was a really hard thing to wrap my head around, because even though, yes, I had the support of those 9 women instantaneously, I had never had anybody before then tell me about a loss that they had had. And so I thought, I knew it happened. I just didn't think I knew anybody that it happened to. And so the more I was talking about it, the more people kept saying, I also had a miscarriage. I also had a late term loss. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am not alone in this. And I am blown away by how many other people have experienced a pregnancy loss.
And isn't it amazing that once you start talking, like you are the vessel. And that's like me. I'm the vessel to so many different areas because of my experiences. And all people want is that one person, which was you, to start talking about your thoughts, feelings, and emotion on this, what happened to you. And then that gives them the freedom. And they're like, oh, God. Because they've been wanting to talk to you or, you know, express themselves, but they're too afraid to.
Right. Or they've had people tell them exactly like you did, like, get over it. It happened. Move on. You have other kids, or whatever else comes out of people's mouths. There was one time last summer, I was at a fair, or maybe it was like June of this year. I was at a craft fair and I had set up my pregnancy loss stuff. And there was this one family that was walking around the craft fair, and I could tell she was with her husband and a few of her kids, and she kept looking back. Every time she would pass my row, she would look back, and I kept thinking, I know she wants to say something, I just don't know if she's going to. And after like the third or fourth pass, I saw she had been separated from the rest of her family, and she came over to my booth and she said, I wish this was around when I had my loss. And she started crying, and I like wanted to jump around the table and give her a hug. I think I did give her a hug in the end, but she said something along the lines of, my husband just told me to get over it. And as she said that, her husband started walking back up the aisle, and she was like, I gotta go. And she disappeared. And my heart broke for her, because that doesn't say anything about her marriage. Look, they probably have a wonderful marriage, but we process things differently. And she still held on to so much of that pain that I just wanted her to be able to release it a little bit. It's always, the grief will always be there, but in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what would be your advice, your words of wisdom that you would say to somebody who's going, has had an infant loss?
My biggest piece of advice is to know that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something where it's a really hard thing to understand until you start being brave enough to find the people that also have been through it. And it takes a big leap of faith. And some people might say, I don't want to talk about it. And you know what? That is their right. But it's also your right to then back away from that relationship for a little while, because you need what you need. And to know that you're not alone, and to find at least one person who you know can be your support person, is a life-changing experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So where are you now in life? You talked about your podcast coming up. You talk about your workbook. Tell us a little bit more about where you are now in your life.
So through this journey, I've really come to understand that resilience is something that can be learned. It's not something that we're born with, or maybe it is for some people, but for most people, I'd say it's something that until you go through a really difficult situation, you have no idea what you can survive. And so I've come to this understanding that I want to be able to help people. And I have a whole keynote speech all about activating your inner strength warrior, because that's all it is. It's activating what's already in there. Mm-hmm. And so there's various different tools that I've learned, various different steps that I've taken in understanding just what to add to your daily life that is so simple that you're like, why isn't this taught in elementary school? This is stuff that kids should be learning when they're 3, 4, 5 years old. Little ways that you can trick your brain to think a little bit more positively, or to take a bad situation and find the silver lining, even though it could be a horrible, horrible, horrible situation, to be able to use breathing techniques to just calm the anxiety and be able to push through those fears and push through those thoughts that are going through your head, ways that you can ground yourself when your mind is going in 50 million different directions. So it's really something that I'm passionate about activating that inner strength warrior and sharing that with people. I talk about it a lot on my website. I talk about it a lot on Instagram and through speaking to various different audiences. I feel like you said, I'm a vessel for just making sure that other people can learn what is truly inside of them and what they're capable of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It's wonderful, even though it can be painful.
Mm-hmm.
People like us that have found our life journey and what our purpose is. And to get to your life purpose, it's not easy. It's not easy.
No, but I think that's the whole point.
That's exactly, you bet it is. Yeah.
Yes, life can be amazing, but you also don't know how amazing it is until you've gone into those deep depths of awfulness.
Yeah, you have to have those times of contrast. There's no question about it. Oh, yeah. Talila, this was such an excellent time with you. And I just want to thank you for sharing all of this with me, with the audience. There's going to be a lot of takeaways from this for sure. And I want to thank you for being a part of my journey. So thank you.
Thank you, Shannon. When I first met you, it was one of those where I was like, that was the most phenomenal conversation I've ever had, especially over Zoom. Like the fact that we connected so easily, I was so honored to have met you. So it's really my pleasure, the fact that I came on.
Well, you have no idea. Like when you talk about Zoom, and now you're going to go through the process of what I'm doing, like talking to people all over the world.
I love that. You are going
to attract that. And it's funny because, you know, people say to me, oh, so what'd you do today? Oh, I'm like, oh, well, I had an interview. Oh, yeah, they were from Australia, or I'm on interviews, right? Oh, yeah. Well, Where was your interview? Oh, I was on I was a guest on a podcast in India.
Right.
That's so funny because now, you know, I'm just kind of like, well, that's my everyday life, right?
I talk to somebody clear across the world.
Like it's nothing, right? And people are looking at me like, oh my gosh. But now you are going to be experiencing it and you're in the process of it. And it is, it's life changing. And
yeah,
we are here to do God's work and we're doing it and we're making a difference in the world. And I want to thank you. I want to say thank you for sharing this time with me. And don't forget to subscribe so you receive every episode. And please share this podcast with others. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram. And if you would like more information on my mindset and manifesting coaching, go to shannonmondor.com. Until next episode, blessings to all, and thank you for being a part of my journey.